Thank you for joining us on WQPH 89.3 FM Shirley Fitchburg, Queen of Perpetual Help, and another edition of Local Matters. On this week's episode, we bring you another episode of WQPH's Our Sister Station, their episode of Crosstalk. And Crosstalk is focused on Father Brown's unique conversion story. A special thank you to Angela Tomlinson for producing this episode. So without further ado, here is part one of a two-part series of Crosstalk.
Welcome to Crosstalk with Charlie Donston, founder and president of CORAC, a national faith-based activist group. Every episode covers a newsmaker who boldly lives the faith by the prayer of doing. Now, here's Charlie.
Welcome to Crosstalk. I'm your host, Charlie Johnston. Crosstalk is a joint project of WSFI Radio in Chicago and CORAC. You know, over the course of a year, I spend 6 to 8 months on the road. In the course of that, I'm giving talks, meeting with CORAC members, just hanging out. But I meet a ton of priests, nuns, religious, fascinating people on that. One that has really stuck in my mind is Father Avram Brown of Yuba City, California. Yuba City is in the Sacramento Valley, which is at the heart of the Fertile Central Valley in California. It is just everywhere you can see, as far as you can see, the orchards of almond trees, walnut trees, prunes, plums, cherries, whatever you want. You'll get it in the Central Valley. It also has, to the west, the shortest mountain range in the world, Sutter Buttes. Great place. Whenever I am in Yuba City, whenever I'm anywhere near Sacramento, I make it a point to get out to St. Isidore's in Yuba City, where Father Brown is the pastor. And he has, number one, one of the most fascinating conversion stories you're ever going to hear. And number two, one of the things I love is when I see a pastor that lives solidarity with his parish. The odds are that if you are a member of Father Avram's parish, he's been to breakfast, lunch, or dinner at your house. Nobody lives solid. You know, there may be somebody who do it as well as he does, but nobody does it better. Hey, that's a good title for a song. Anyway, Father Avram, welcome to Crosstalk.
Thank you, Charlie. Great to be here today. It's a lot of fun. And speaking of the farming valley here, we have gorgeous weather here in California. So if they should come out for a quick visit, it is sunny. It is blue skies. It is springtime weather. So we're definitely enjoying our Northern California climate today.
Well, alas, Father, I will not be in California until the fall sometime, but I am looking very much forward to it. And folks, you should know, if you want to get away from the craziness in L.A. and San Francisco, you know, a lot of the places you got crazy, you go to Yuba City and you're going to be among friends.
We have city in the name, but this is rural country. We call ourselves Yuba City. But it's all farmers. We're super glad that St. Isidore is our patron saint, you know, a farmer from Spain 800 years ago. He and his wife, Maria, lived that faithful, prayerful, generous service and concern, love for the poor, love for those in need, and most especially dedication, that prayerfulness. We see that too with our people here. So
beautiful. You know, one of the things that we go through and pray for a good harvest and everything. But in the area that you're in, and of course, to give people an idea, as you say, it's farmland as far as you can see, it's orchards. This is Yuba City. Would not be a good place to get lost if you're drunk at night.
Oh, my word. No, I grew up in this area. I grew up a little north of here. And so I remember the almond blossoms in the springtime when all the trees are just blooming. It almost looks like it's snowing when those white petals start drifting off from the branches and landing on the ground. You have the peach trees. You have the walnut groves. Even our Trappist monks in their monastery just north of us, the Abbey of New Clairvaux, their livelihood for years and years since they were first founded in the 50s has been the orchards, has been pruning and harvesting. And speaking of pruning, prunes is one of the other big products in this area. So it's a very, you could say, biblical place to be. Everywhere you look, you have little reminders of the parables, reminders of how our Father, how God is watching over us. He's cultivating us, he's tending us, pruning us, but allowing us to bring forth that bountiful harvest. So a good place for reflecting on what God's up to.
How big is your parish, Father?
You know, we're most of Sutter County. The towns north of us will be, 6,000 people, 11,000 people, some 3,000. But Yuba City itself is somewhere in the neighborhood of 65,000. Most of our folks are farmers, but then we also have folks who commute down to Sacramento, work at the state capitol there. And so we have five masses on the weekends. We have about 3,000 folks in the pews every Sunday. So we definitely, are bustling in terms of parishioners. We just kind of, Bishop Ray, our auxiliary bishop, just confirmed 140 kids 2 or 3 Saturdays ago. So we were happy with that ample class. But many, many families, many, many children. And so our wealth here at St. Isidore's is families and faithful families. That's where our population is.
One of the weirdest things, whenever I'm in Yuba City, how long have you been pastor at
It's
St.
9 years, 9 years now. Just before this, I spent 5 years in Gridley, the town to the north, and so got to know the farming culture, got to know the sort of tempo of an agricultural parish at Sacred Heart. But it's been since 2016 that I came here to St. Isidore's.
Happy dog. The first time I ever came out to Yuba City. I met you then, and you've been there ever since. You know, I'm wondering on this stuff. You know, with the with how you interact with your parish, what are some of the key things? You know, I've been there. You do devotions. You do meetings on different things. What are some of the things that you create that you've created to get so many people involved in your parish?
I think a part of it is what it means to be a farmer. We have folks here who know that anything that's worthwhile takes time. Anything that's valuable takes dedication and effort. And a lot of results are going to be subtle and slow. And so I do believe the farming dynamic really contributes to a lot of the extraordinary commitment that our parishioners have. When I got here 9 years ago, it was also a jubilee year. It was the Jubilee Year of Mercy, the one in 2016 that Pope Francis surprised us with out of the blue. And so, in arriving here during that jubilee year, I swiftly recognized that our parishioners were folks who were willing and ready to give of themselves to be dedicated. And so, I extended an invitation. Within a few weeks of arriving here, saying, we've got a good sized parish, we've got a good sized sanctuary. What if we were to remain in prayer here in church 24 hours a day? What if we were to say, we believe in God, we believe in his miracles, and so we're going to respond to his call, we're going to respond to Our Lady of Fatima's call for prayer and for urgent prayer. And we're going to practice this night and day, never relenting in this pleading to God, thanksgiving to God, opening our hearts to Him. And our parishioners said, yes, that literally means to get people praying 24 hours a day. And part of our template, of course, was to have 2 people minimum praying every hours of the day. And so that means hundreds and hundreds of parishioners. And so because of that eager response, we've been able to have exposition of the Eucharist, the presence of Jesus and the monstrance on the altar, 24 hours a day, since 2016, since the previous Jubilee year. And as you may remember, Charlie, there was this little thing that happened back in 2020 They called it a lockdown. They called it a pandemic. They called it a don't go to church time. But here at St. Isidore's, we said the opposite during that season when there was no liturgies, when there was nothing going on. Our Bishop Jaime Soto encouraged the pastors throughout the diocese to keep their churches open, to keep the doors unlocked, to create a place where people could come to pray. And so our parishioners, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, made sure that Jesus had people who loved him in his presence. And that transformed our parish. As we went through those seasons of desolation, that faithfulness, that consistency, that humble dedication of our parishioners truly opened the floodgates of blessing. And we paired that with the Sacrament of Reconciliation. During those days, we were holding confessions out on the lawn, out on the grass in front of the parish hall. I got a great tan standing out there for hours and hours every day through the week. When I first arrived here back in 2016, as with many parishes, there was one time per week that confessions were offered. But swiftly upon arrival, I discovered that there was an abundant response to that sacrament. The lines were so long, the hours, those were Thursday evenings, were so long that we added a second day for confessions. We added a third day. We're now up to one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. We're up to 7 times a week now that we offer confessions, and still there is the ample, lengthy lines of so many people turning to God and repentance. And so I think it's that combination of faithfulness in prayer with Eucharistic adoration, and then openness to the mercy of God through the sacrament of confession. That's demonstrated by the parishioners, and I think it's because of that humble awareness that it's God who brings a bountiful harvest. It's been
Okay.
beautiful to see.
We're going coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about your amazing conversion story. First, I want to note that, a priest cannot talk about what anybody has told him in confessions. But I got to tell you, Father, when I get behind a little old lady to go to confession and I have to wait 20 minutes until that sweet little old lady is done, it makes me think that maybe the TSA has a point in giving extra screening to all those grandmas. Anyway, coming up, one of the most amazing conversion stories you've ever heard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Crosstalk. My guest today, Father Avram Brown from St. Isidore's Parish in Yuba City, California. And Father Avram has one of the most amazing conversion stories ever. He was raised by New Age hippies. Tell me how that worked. I mean, it's not the recommended way to raise a priest, but in your case, it worked.
No, it's extraordinary, Charlie, and it is so true. I'm just, every day I'm grateful for the gift of conversion, the gift of the faith. But it's so true that this gift is something that I received from my parents. This story, more than anything, is their story, and we should be interviewing them. Mom and dad are like 82, 83 years old now, but their life, their witness to faith is truly incredible. And so in glancing and investigating what was the journey that led me to the sacraments, what was the journey that led me to this life of priesthood, it's very much mom and dad's faith, and as my brothers and I can attest, their courage. What mom and dad demonstrated with each step of their journey was a courage, a confidence. And I don't know how you, I don't know how you concoct that or where that comes from. How does a person gain the grounded assurance that they can take a leap, that they can step forward? That courage, that confidence is what made my parents' lives and my brother's lives and mine amazing. And that would be the secret that I think for anybody could transform their story. I guess what you and I could say at this point is pray for courage, pray for confidence, ask God for the gift of faith, like the blind man in the Gospels. Lord, I believe, help my unbelief, to ask for even more confidence. Yes, for even more trust in God.
You know, Father, when we first talked about this, one of the things one would not expect a Catholic priest to rise out of that, and both of your parents converted, I understand. But one of the things that you emphasized to me is that your parents were not set on some ideology. They were seekers. And seekers after truth usually end up finding it, don't they?
You know, that's so true. Mom and dad, and to the present, continue to have this openness, a hunger. You know, Jesus in the Beatitudes says, blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And I think that truly resonates that God, in creating a heart that's hungry, in creating a heart that's looking for more, another word we could use for that is desire. You know, creating, as God creates us with a deep desire to recognize, no. With the things that I have, even if I have stuff in this world, even if I have security, it's not enough. And so to be seeking, to be looking for more, that opens the door to miracles. And that was mom and dad's story, and that was the gift that they gave to us. Mom and dad were raised without Christianity. This was, like you said, just pre-hippie, because they were kids in the 50s. And so mom's family was what you and I could call secular humanist. And so secular means there's nothing except for the material world. Unless you can weigh it, measure it, you know, put it on a scale under a microscope, it does not exist. Only this universe is real. But then humanist is that idea, like, you know, us human beings, we're special, so let's just try to make the world a better place, you know, with our technology, with our psychology, with our medicine. You know, we can help improve, you know, the lot of others. And so there's a, you know, a good, you know, what do you call it, goodwill there, but it's ultimately, you know, trapped. And then meanwhile, dad's family was Unitarian, which is a fascinating one. Those guys started up, I think, in like the 1700s, 1800s. And as you can hear from that name, Unitarian, they say, okay, there's a higher power. There's an energy up there, but it's not the Trinity. It's not Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Instead, it's sort of an unknown entity that we can't quite track down. We can't. One of the quips about Unitarianism is, if you found the truth, or if you feel like you've found reality, it means that you're mistaken, because God is ultimately, or any higher energy, is ultimately unknowable. And so, and as you can imagine, Charlie, that means that two kids were raising up in a deeply dissatisfying home, ultimately.
You know, one of the things, I come from a Southern fundamentalist family. I was the first person ever in my family to become Catholic. Interesting reaction from the larger family. First thing my dad did, he went out and got a Catholic Bible and he read the whole thing. He said, "It's just like ours, except those extra books." And then he felt like reading the church fathers, reading things, he felt like he grew. It, that my conversion helped him to understand his faith better. Now, in your situation, what was the reaction of your family when you said, "You know, I think I want to become a Catholic"? That had to
No,
be a weird situation.
Charlie, I'm so glad you shared that, because your story and your family story is that reminder that it isn't always the same. You know, sometimes we can be surprised as we take a step of faith, as we move forward with honoring God, responding to God, listening to His word. Sometimes that can be a beacon that inspires, that nudges, that opens. Invites others to take a step forward as well. But in my family's story, unfortunately, it's been, I don't want to say the opposite, but it's been a long and slow and very painful encounter of response from others, because mom and dad first. as young adults, their journey towards discovery, their journey of seeking started, like you said, in the 60s, started when, as you can imagine, for the two of them in San Francisco in the 1960s, had a little bit of that thing that they call the hippies. The Birkenstocks that mom and dad went through, were well worn. But they started out with the discovery of Eastern religions. They started out with Buddhism, Zen meditation, that practice of sitting cross-legged, facing a blank white wall, trying to empty your mind of thoughts through meditation. And this is what's so interesting, Charlie, with your description of the response of others. Their families, my grandparents on both sides had no problem with that practice of Zen. For them, it was, aspirational, inspirational, commendable. What a nice thing to be pursuing. And so somehow, my extended relatives, mom and dad's siblings, my aunts and uncles, didn't react negatively to that chapter. But as mom and dad, having gotten married in that practice of Buddhism, as a friend invited them to her Sunday service. And what I love about that is that evangelization, sharing the faith with others, can be something as simple as inviting a friend to join you to go to church. But mom and dad went to this Sunday service at a Protestant church. And we're really moved by it. We're really struck by it. It stirred those deeper questions. Wait, is there something more? Is there something that we haven't yet found in the direction that we've gone? And because mom and dad were willing to take steps, because they were willing to press forward, they did, take those extra steps. With my dad in particular, it was great. The pathway that he took, he said, "Well, this Christianity stuff maybe has something to it. So I'm going to study Christianity." And the way that he d launched on that was by enrolling in a class of biblical Greek. He starts studying biblical Greek in order to get to know what this Christianity business is. And what dad describes is he's reading Mark chapter 4 there in the Greek, and it's that incredible story of Jesus with his disciples out in the boat in the middle of the storm. Jesus is sound asleep, which of course is that biblical reminder. Jesus took naps. You should take naps too. Be like Jesus. But the apostles in this storm are terrified. They wake Jesus up. They even, in a sense, accuse him. They say, "Master, do you not care that we are perishing?" And in their fear, Jesus responds. He speaks to the wind, he speaks to the waves, and immediately there's this extraordinary peace. And then the next verse really struck my dad. Let me see if I can pull the Greek back up. It says, "Ephubesan phobon megalon," or "Megan." The disciples feared a great fear. In other words, they were far more terrified of Jesus and the power that he had revealed than they had ever been of the storm, of the wind and the waves. And dad describes that it was at that moment that he met Jesus, that he discovered Jesus, that he fell in love with the person of Jesus, and his journey just continued forward from there. He got baptized, became a Christian shortly thereafter. Mom also took that step of becoming a Christian, getting baptized. My older brother had already been born, so he was baptized as a little kid. And so what that meant is that when I was born, a little while after that, I was born into a Christian family, into a Protestant family. And so I was raised with that awareness that a father loves us, that God creates us, that he has a plan for our lives, that Jesus wants to be our friend, that God speaks to us with this in the scriptures. That was all a part of the world that I grew up in. But mom and dad's parents, mom and dad's brothers and sisters, were amazingly opposed, almost to the point of disowning mom and dad. It was incredible. In contrast to their tolerance or even appreciation of mom and dad converting to Buddhism or Zen meditation, Where it's like, oh, this is fine. You know, there's nothing, no problem here. The family and the extended family were adamantly opposed to this collapsing into superstition, this taking on of a repressive worldview, this going backwards. And so, again, it was the courage of mom and dad and the confidence of mom and dad to press forward in the face of opposition that gave to me and my brothers, my younger brother was born a little later, this recognition that confidence, courage is the vital thing for flourishing, for moving forward in life.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion about, converts have a lot that they have to deal with. Every conversion story is different, and every conversion story is a miracle. We're going to talk a little bit about that in St. Paul at the Areopagus when we come back.
That's all the time we have this week. Tune in next week at this same time for the conclusion of this broadcast. Thank you for listening to another edition of WQPH's Local Matters. We hope you enjoyed the broadcast and hope you have a blessed week.